This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Corporate Service Supply and Manufacturing, a DJI Enterprise dealer providing DJI equipment and support for law enforcement, public safety, construction, and other commercial users of unmanned aerial systems. To learn more, visit the uavdigest.com/css. And by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the uavdigest.com/goengineer. You're listening to episode 256 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in steamy Fort Washington, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, how's the weather up in Connecticut?
Equally steamy, I think. We've got an interesting show, I think, David, a little bit different format than we've had in a while.
Yeah, we're not going to do all the talking today. So we've actually got a guest, which is always fun and a bit of a break from news. So why don't you introduce Chris?
All right. Well, our guest is Chris Anderson. He's CEO of The Drone Trainer. That's at thedronetrainer.com. Now, he offers online drone training courses as well as the Drone Trainer podcast. Now, Chris has owned and operated a commercial drone operation since January in 2014, working in real estate, construction, mapping, 3D modeling, inspections, as well as a variety of oil field applications. Chris has provided in-person training to clients across several industries, and as early as 2017, he expanded into an online delivery platform where he's worked with students from all around the world. Well, Chris, welcome to the UAV Digest.
Well, thank you for having me, and thank you for that introduction.
Now, Chris, on your podcast, you interview drone pilots from all over to find out how they're marketing their business, the equipment they're flying, maybe some tips for succeeding as a commercial drone pilot. Has it been a challenge to find drone pilots, or are there as many of them around as we might think?
Actually, it's been quite easy to find people to be on the show. So half of it would be by my own searching, just through my connections I've made on Twitter and Instagram and other people within the industry. And then I do get a lot of recommendations as well, too. Either somebody who's listened to the show and says, I've got a friend that would be excellent to be on here, or somebody who might want to hear from their competition, for example. I've had that before as well, too, where someone said, I want to know what this guy's doing. Like, can you, you know, get into it a little bit with him and try and find out what it is so I can learn as well.
A little bit of competitive intelligence there. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
So what kind of people are you finding that start their own drone business? Is there a way to kind of categorize them or classify them, or are they just all varied?
It's varied. I think everyone is consistent. They have the entrepreneurial attitude where they want to go and, you know, make money and have fun while they're like doing it at the same time. So it seems like there's kind of a combo of somebody who got a drone and then the light bulb went off. And then there's other people that thought of the business idea first and then went out and picked up a drone. So I don't think that there's one way to categorize most of the people that I've spoken with so far. But the entrepreneurial side of things is definitely one of the main characteristics I see out of almost everybody.
And do they have some drone flying experience or some aviation experience generally? Or, I mean, I imagine, well, in fact, I know from listening that some of them do, but for our listeners who might be curious, are we seeing a lot of people come into this industry who really don't have any background in this, but sort of see it purely from a business standpoint? What do you see?
I see both of those. I've spoken with people that have come from a military background and other forms of aviation, like such as retired airline pilots and things that have moved now into the unmanned side of things. And also like the purely business side, like you mentioned, like someone who thought there's a need right there. Now I need to figure out how I can solve that. I got to buy a drone and then figure out how does it work? How can I apply, you know, everything I've learned now to create something that I can in turn make money off of?
And certainly providing services in the drone industry, there's a lot of different kinds of services that one might provide, a lot of different markets. You know, we talk about agriculture and real estate, structure inspections. There was even, if I recall correctly, you had a guest that recently that focused in on golf courses.
Yes.
Do you find that people tend to specialize at a pinpoint, or are they kind of looking to provide services more broadly?
I think at first I find that a lot of people, they'll do almost anything just to try it, just try it out and see what's going to work and what's going to work in their market. And the ones that I see generally that have the most success are the ones that will specialize in something. So the golf course example is a good one. That guy, he had a lot of connections in the industry prior to starting up the drone side of things. So it worked out well for him, and he's carving out a nice little niche in that market. So, you know, he's got the advantage of if someone is looking for a golf course or shots of the golf course, that they think of him, right? If you're generalist, you can get good at a variety of things, and then there's a lot of things that you're not going to have to turn down. You can say, yeah, I can do that, I can do that. But you have to make sure you don't spread yourself too thin as well. And I can speak from my own experience. Like at the start, I did the same thing. I took on everything I could just to see. And then it slowly started getting more refined. You get better at a few things rather than being so-so at a lot of things is what I found was successful for me. And I see that in a lot of people I speak with as well.
Yeah, and I think that makes sense. And maybe you don't even have to start out, even if you ultimately end up in a niche, you don't have to start out with that specifically targeted necessarily. It may have a serendipitous kind of a component to it, just depending on the network you develop and who comes to understand your skill set and all of that. So, I mean, what do you think, David? Do you think it's better to start out knowing exactly where you're going to go with your drone business or let it unfold?
I've tried to think of a smart-ass answer, and I failed miserably. I think you should start off knowing exactly where you want to go and be open to other possibilities. How's that?
Okay. All right. That's a different approach.
I don't know. It's Chris, I'll ask you. Do you think there's people have success both ways? I guess it just depends upon the personality of the person starting the business. One thing I think we've talked about a lot over the years on this show is democratization. You know, there's a lot of stuff that everybody's able to do, and then that also broadens out to there are possibilities that we don't never even dreamed of that have come out of this. So, I mean, do you get that theme in your discussions?
Absolutely. And just speaking to my own experience prior to that, too, when I started with this, my goal was to do golf courses. So similar to that gentleman I spoke with a few weeks ago. And that's all I had on my mind. And that's all that I kind of prepared myself to do. And then the very first call I got from somebody just from seeing some of my shots on Instagram was actually in real estate. And it wasn't even something that dawned on me. And I know now it's a very popular area for drone photographers to work in. But at the time, it wasn't something that I thought of. And so I started with that. And then it's rolled into, you know, a whole like tower inspections and things that I never would have thought of at the start, right? And then speaking with, the other people too, like there's such a wide variety. I have spoken with some that thought like, you know, they name their company something like something specific to real estate or something specific to inspection or whatever. But I find that they're, you know, they branch off and get into other things as well too. So you can start with something at the start, like something specific, but I think it's to your advantage to try different things and see where it is. If you're looking for pure profit, see where the profits are, see where the most work is, see where the best opportunity is going to be for you. So I think specializing is important later, but at the start, I'd recommend going broad and assessing from there.
Now, Chris, you mentioned Instagram, and one of the threads I think that some of your guests, at least some of the recent guests have had, is how they're using social media to market their services. It's not, you know, we're not in the old days where, you know, you buy a display ad in a paper telephone directory, are we?
No, it's we have the advantage of social media. Instagram is a huge one for sure, and it seems to be a trend amongst almost everybody that because of a lot of the video and photography side of things, it's all visual. Even some of the mapping and things, you can show those things visually afterwards. And the way Instagram works with the hashtags and being able to tag people, I've spoken with people that have had a lot of success in their markets by putting up a picture and then tagging the influencers in their communities or other companies that they're trying to get the attention of. Say if they take a picture of a stadium or a building or something like that, tag that building, tag that stadium. Now they're going to get that in their feed saying that they just got tagged with something. And that has led to a lot of business coming straight through Instagram for a lot of people I've spoken with.
Hmm. Yeah, that was kind of unexpected for me. Now, maybe that's because I come from the corporate environment where executives, managers, people who are likely to make decisions on these kinds of issues, these kinds of topics, are generally not cruising around Instagram. But I guess for a lot of the companies that are looking for drone services or maybe don't know that they should be looking for drone services, this is a better way to discover that.
Yeah, and I think even if it's not the decision maker that's looking at Instagram, there's somebody there that is. If it's, you know, in the social media department or somebody who's just curious to see what their company is up to on social media and see what they've been tagged in and stuff like that. So it's just a matter of getting the right eyes on what you're trying to put out there.
Mm. Are you seeing mostly solopreneurs as opposed to drone operators that are part of a larger organization, either an organization, a company that provides drone services or part of a larger company and they're just in the section of it that has that capability? What do you see there?
I see the majority to be solar entrepreneurs, so people working for themselves. And I don't know if that's because a lot of people that when they're starting off, they're maybe holding their day job still, just waiting to see if this is going to work. Is it going to be successful?
Yeah.
Maybe they're not in a position to take another job yet, or maybe there isn't another job in their market. There's no other company that's hiring, so start on their own. With the advantage of that is they can take care of all their marketing and all the everything themselves and basically create their business and their work the way that they want to, right? They're not having to, you know, work under another company. Mm-hmm. So I'd say, like, out of everybody I've spoken with so far, I'd say at least 90% are working on their own.
Okay. And how about equipment? Is everybody flying DJI?
Yeah, you betcha. That seems to be the number one. Most people are flying the Phantom 4, Phantom 4 Pros. I spoke with a gentleman in Spain who was flying one of the caged systems. Escaping me right now. But the one that you can basically fly into tunnels and stuff like that, it can bounce off the walls and it's fine. But other than that, yeah, for the majority are flying DJI product.
Yeah, if it was me, I'd go for the caged kind because I tend to bounce off walls and other things quite a lot. Oh, dear.
If you have the money for it, then yeah, you can have fun with that cage, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah. Tell us a little bit about the Drone Trainer website. You provide some training materials. Some of them are free and maybe some of them are sort of premium. How does that work?
So I've been doing in-person training for quite a while now, and it just dawned on me one day that I could probably expand this out and get the training out to more people. And you know what better than use the internet to make that happen? So I created the Drone Trainer along with my wife, and we've got some free training courses on there. So the main one is the learn how to fly safely. So I go over a lot of the basics like takeoff, landing, and a couple of drills that are important for every drone pilot to have to, you know, sharpen up your skills and make sure that you don't crash into something. And so I provide that for free. I've got a bunch of other free stuff too, like pre-flight checklists and logbook, weather cheat sheets. So if people are looking at the METAR and the TAF and trying to remember what the difference like HZ means or something like that, they're going to, you know, have a quick reference right there. So through those things, I've been able to, you know, connect with people all around the world. And it's been great to hear, you know, the success that people have had. And then branching out from that, I created two courses as well, one specific to real estate and one specific to mapping. Those two are paid, but they're basically, it takes all the pain and all the nonsense I went through at the start because I had no one to show me how this worked and compile it down into a couple hours that you can learn quickly and skip all of that nonsense yourself.
So I see in the How to Fly Your Drone Safely course, the free one, that there's 8 modules, and you really kind of cover a lot of ground, really, from start to finish. I mean, starting with the pre-flight checklist, calibrating your compass, and all the way through post-flight and the logbook. So it's pretty comprehensive.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure that I had, you know, a good cover on it, because I've seen it, and I get people that contact me all the time. They bought a drone, they took it out of the box, they didn't read anything or didn't do anything, and they crashed it right away. And I think if you take the 20 minutes or half hour to watch something like that and just to, you know, get a good handle on it, it's going to be in your mind when you open it up. So my goal is that people can keep their investment and keep their, or their toy or whatever you want to look at it, and not pile it up on the first flight.
And how about you personally? Where did your interest in drones come from?
So I was doing portrait and wedding photography. And then one night I was just reading some articles online before bed. And I came across an article about a realtor that was using something called a drone to take photos of his high-end real estate listings along the California coastline. And I just thought, like, what is that? So I started Googling and saw, like, flying camera and the Phantom 2 with the GoPro hanging off it and all that kind of stuff. And it was like the light bulb just went off. Like, this is what I need to get into now. Like, I've had an interest in aviation since I was a kid. My neighbor had a Mooney, and
nice.
I don't know if I should. He let me fly it a couple of times when I probably maybe shouldn't have, because I was so young. But anyway, it's got an interest in that, you know, from a young age. And when I saw like the combo of flying and then also with photography, I thought it's a no-brainer. So the next day I ordered a Phantom 2, and things just took off from there. And that pun is intended.
Yeah. How do you rate the quality of the cameras on those kind of, you know, consumer basically drones, coming from a, you know, photography background?
Coming from a full frame SLR background, it's not the same. I don't have the same control over the camera system, just, you know, smaller glass, smaller sensors and things. But with the, you know, the improvement, the constant improvements in the sensors and the glass that's in front of them, the quality you can get out of them is excellent. I find it's two different things. Like, my shooting style when I'm on the ground shooting by the SLR, I shoot a lot of bokeh, so I have my subject in focus and everything else is blurred out. With a drone, that's a little bit more difficult to almost impossible, depending on what you're shooting. You know, you got to change your style a little bit. As for the quality, like now with the 20 megapixel Phantom 4s and the other ones that are out on the market now, even getting up into that X7 on the Inspire 2, the quality is definitely increasing, especially with DJI's acquisition of Hasselblad. So they're two different things. They're totally different things. But yeah, I'm very happy with the quality that comes out of the product so far. And I just can't wait to see what the next generation is going to look like.
I'll tell you a little secret, Chris. For those of you who will take a look at the show notes, we have a photo of Chris, and thanks for sending that in, Chris. And when I look at that, you know, I thought to myself, this was taken by somebody that knows what they're doing, because the background is, you know, creamy and out of focus. So did you set that shot up, Chris?
I set it up, but my wife, she knows her way around a camera quite well. So it she took it, and yeah, worked out great.
Okay, we need to ask the ultimate question. Canon or Nikon?
Nikon.
Yay! Oh, he can stay, Max.
All right.
I'm not kicked off?
No.
I'm the Nikon shooter on the show.
Yeah, I've been with Nikon the whole time, and it's one of those things like where you get in, you get the glass, and then you can't really move away. And I don't want to, but even if I did want to, I can't, because I'm so invested in the lenses now. So it's just, yeah, I'm Nikon.
Yeah.
Well, Chris, one of the things Max and I have talked about, because both of us are photographers, is, are you a better drone photographer because you know photography and learning to fly the drone, or do you think you can have a drone flying background and learn photography?
Oh, that's a tough one. I think having the eye for photography is important. It's not always something that you can learn, right? If you know, you can practice things and like learn, you know, kind of what to look for and rules of thirds and things like that. But sometimes it just comes down to what you see with your own eye. And then it's a matter, I find, with still photography, the flight component is not that important because often we're using like GPS stabilized modes and things like that. So it's, you know, you get the drone up there as slow or as jerky or whatever as you want to get it up to that position. But if you can put it to where you want to and then use your eye to get that photo, I think you're, you know, you're in great shape and you're getting that vantage point that you just can't get otherwise.
Yeah, I think if your intent is to fly and do something with sensors other than just photography or videography, that's one thing. But the way I look at it is if you're going up there to shoot real estate or, you know, create some videos of the golf course or whatever on a commercial or for a commercial purpose, then you're a photographer first, at least in my opinion. And it's not about, oh, I'm great with drones, so I can just turn the camera on and be very effective, be very competitive in the market. I think you have to be a photographer first. Now, you know, you may have to learn how to do that. If you come from that background, that's great. But if you don't come from that background, I think that, you know, not everybody realizes the degree to which they should devote energy to learning photography skills. At least that's kind of how I look at it.
Yeah, and that all makes sense. That just triggered my memory too. I had somebody apply for a job with my commercial company, and I just asked to send his demo reel. And what he sent me was a video of him flying a remote-controlled helicopter and doing all kinds of crazy stunts. And it was very impressive. But then I asked, like, oh, I'm looking for someone to shoot video. So do you have any... any reference or anything like that that you can send me with, you know, some of your work?
Yeah.
And he said, well, I'm a good pilot, so it doesn't matter. And I was impressed with his skills. However, just going back to exactly what you said, like, if he can't show me anything, he's probably not in tune with that side, right?
Yeah.
He's got the hands to fly and do the acrobatic stuff, but when it comes down to the actual photography side of things, can he do it? Maybe, but he's not showing me anything, so probably not.
Right, yeah. The drone is just a different camera, that's all.
Yep.
Chris, you're in Canada. What does the regulatory landscape look like up there for you personally?
So we're regulated by Transport Canada, and to be able to operate commercially, we have to have something called an SFOC, which is a Special Flight Operations Certificate. And those are granted on a case-by-case basis, or you can get what's called a standing SFOC, which is good for a year period. I was lucky right from the start. I sent in a whole bunch of applications for the golf courses that I signed prior to getting my certification done. And basically Transport Canada said, instead of giving me all the individual ones, they'd give me a standing one to start with. And they hoped they didn't hear from me in that first year, because if they heard from me, obviously something went wrong. So I got, thankfully I got kind of a lucky break right at the start. And since then, yeah, I've just been every year going through the renewal process to continue getting a new certificate. But things are changing. We're going to be going to a licensing model coming up. The new regulations haven't been released yet, so we're still using the SFOC model. But the new regulations are going to have a licensing model. So it'll be some type of exam. Probably similar to what you guys have with the 107, that allows pilots to operate. I think there's going to be different classes. I think there's going to be a couple of different classes that, based on the type of operation you're going to want to work in, you have to get class, you know, A, B, or C, whatever it's going to be of the license. So that's coming prior to the end of the year, is what Transport Canada says.
How about non-commercial flyers? Is there a micro drone or some threshold below which registration, all the regulations don't apply?
I think it's 250 grams. So something like the Tello or, you know, the really real small ones like that, they don't, you don't have to have an SFOC. You don't have to work within those same, the same constraints. But everything 250 and up, yeah, you have to work either if you're going to work commercially, even recreationally within a certain area, within a certain distance from an airport or another aerodrome, you still have to have an SFOC if you want to work or fly recreationally. But with the new licensing system, I don't know what it's going to mean for the recreational pilots. I think my best guess is that if you want to fly in the city or anywhere near the city, you're going to have to get a license, whether you're flying commercially or recreationally.
Yeah, I think kind of makes sense. How about looking into the future? Where do you see yourself going?
I'm not sure. Like, I laugh because I think about the drone delivery side of things, and I know you guys have had discussions about it, and I'm kind of back and forth on the fence. Like, at first I just said, like, it's not going to happen. Like, I just don't, for, I don't see how it's going to happen. But then, speaking with one of the companies that we've worked with over in Japan, they have an idea for deployment over there. And I think it's been discussed in North America as well, too, but it's to fly immediately above the power lines, because generally there's nothing else that's going to be utilizing that airspace unless there's, you know, a helicopter doing inspections or something like that. But utilize the power lines, which there are tons of in Japan. I know over here in Canada, at least, we're trying to move away from having everything above ground, but in Japan there's a ton of power lines around, so they're looking at that. The, you know, the last few meters, that's going to be the tough part. Maybe depending on what it is, maybe you don't need to do those last few meters. If it's some life or life-saving situation, then yeah, those last few meters are going to make, you know, make a difference. But, you know, if you're delivering an Amazon product, maybe have a port or something like that. So I find that to be fascinating, because like I said, I've been flip-flopping. I thought, like, it's not going to work. And then now I think, oh, this power line idea is actually pretty good. Maybe it will work. I think at first we're going to see that in a closed environment. So within, you know, a warehouse or something like that, where everything is controlled and everything is known, rather than the unlimited variables of being outside with birds, animals, people, cars, all that kind of stuff that can get in the way of a delivery. So I'm optimistic. Today I'm optimistic. Maybe tomorrow I won't be. I don't know, but I'm really looking forward to seeing how things are going to progress with that. And as for myself, yeah, I enjoy keeping up with the tech and keeping up with you know, the industry demands and stuff. But like, I started with the goal of doing only golf courses, and next thing you know, I'm flying up flare stacks and things like that to have a look for broken pipes and cracks and things like that that I would have never imagined I would have been doing. And, you know, standing there in giant mines, flying around, and it's taken me to a lot of places. So where it's going to go, I don't know, but I enjoy the ride and just keeping up with the technology.
Are you able to do this full time?
Yeah. So generally in the winter time here, it's very slow. Some of the only things that really come up in the winter are some of the oil field things. A lot of the oil stuff, it only occurs in the winter here because of the, there's ice roads to be able to allow people to go in and work.
Oh.
So that stuff is generally all that really goes on in the winter. It's the summer season, so spring, summer, and then into the fall before everything starts to turn to brown, it's gangbusters. And then, yeah, the winter is the slow part for sure. So as long as you're strategic with it, like, don't spend all your money in the summertime because there's a long winter ahead.
Yeah, and find something in the winter months that is out of phase, 180 degrees. You know, sell snowmobiles, right, or ski equipment or something like that, I guess.
Or do that, yeah.
Yeah, wonderful. David, any other things you can think of? You can say no.
I feel like I need to join the conversation somehow. And I think Chris has been an amazing guest. He must have, but Chris, I think maybe you need to start a podcast.
Oh yeah. I think I did that in November.
Okay. Let's go down that road. What do you like about podcasting, and what was your inspiration for getting into podcasting?
Well, I've been an avid podcast listener for quite a few years now. So I started listening to a variety of shows, like some of the comedians that I follow, and then also industry shows such as yours. Just listening, you know, I had an interest in it, and I always kind of wondered, like, how do you make it happen? So I was just reading online, and then it wasn't my intent to have a podcast when I started the Drone Trainer, but just, you know, listening to some of the shows like yours and listening to other shows that are unrelated to drones, but just hearing of the success of people that are, you know, talking about, you know, their, you know, whatever it is they're building, like they're working on business X and sharing it with people. I thought that's not a bad idea to do that with drones as well too. So I just researched it, and I've got a music background as well too. So I had the microphones and all, like, the setup to get everything into the computer already. So it was a non-investment on that side of things. And it was more of a just learning how to make it happen. And yeah, first time I pushed publish, that was a bit of a nervous moment. But since then, yeah, things have been going pretty good.
Yeah, that first time you wonder if anybody's going to listen other than your mother and your spouse. But
I definitely wondered that, because I thought, like, is this just going to go in a black hole right now? Like, did I just waste, you know, a couple of bucks on my podcast hosting plan right now.
Yeah.
Just to, you know, all the editing and stuff like that. Like the first couple, it took me forever to, you know, get everything formatted right and stuff. And it was, you know, it was a lot of investment in time. And my wife was looking at me like, are you sure this is what you want to do? Like, you've just sat there for a long time doing this. And I'm like, oh, I think so. And then now it's like, no big deal. Like once I got my groove and getting the format and everything together, it's fun. I like it. I really enjoy it. I like being able to speak with people from, you know, all over the world and wide variety of backgrounds and experience. And then the beauty of the podcast is I can share it with somebody, and it's as easy as them just having a subscription on their podcasting app that every week when I put out an episode, they get it. And I just like it. I like the ability to reach people that are interested in the same kind of thing that I am.
That's wonderful. It really is a great personal learning experience. And I don't mean just the technical parts of it, but like you say, you get to speak with so many interesting people about so many interesting topics and things that you would never imagine you'd be involved in otherwise. So that's great. There's you know, a small number of podcasts, I think, related to unmanned aviation. It's a pretty good cross section, I guess, but they're all different. I mean, don't you think, Chris? There is not a lot of redundancy, I don't think, in terms of the flavor and style and content of the unmanned podcasts that are out there.
Yeah, I agree, and that's, you know, that's kind of why I thought I'd start mine as well too, because I saw a bit of a gap. Maybe not a gap, but I saw, you know, opportunity for myself to learn from speaking to other people, and then why not share it with others? Like, yeah, there's not much overlap at all, I think. Just there's, you know, people that interview CEOs of drone companies and stuff, which is very interesting to listen to. And then there's me that's talking to people that are, you know, starting up their companies, and they're at various levels of it. And people are also finding that to be very interesting. The news, the video of the week, things like that you guys are doing, like it's all excellent. And yeah, every show has its place, and you know, for all of us to have success, it's great.
Yep, absolutely. Well, Chris, thanks for coming on the show. Tell our listeners where they can find you online, learn more about the Drone Trainer.
So if you head over to thedronetrainer.com, you can check out all of the freebies and the courses and things that I have there. And then I'm also fairly active on social media, on both Twitter and Instagram at The Drone Trainer. And on Facebook, if you search for The Drone Trainer, I will come up there as well, too.
Very good. All right. Well, you've been listening to episode 256 of the UAV Digest. As always, you can find us at theuavdigest.com. Show notes for each episode are there. If you want to go to the show notes specifically for this episode, you can go straight there by visiting theuavdigest.com/256.
And of course, if you want to dive into the incredible realm of social media, you can find us on Twitter at UAV Digest, on Facebook, facebook.com/UAV Digest. You can find Max at Max Flight on Twitter, or at DM Vanderhoof on Twitter if you want to talk to us. You can always talk to us via email at feedback@theuavdigest.com. And when you send us that email, also ask to be part of our Slack listener team. That's where our high performance conversations go, where we learn, where Max and I learn really about what's going on in the industry by all of our intense listeners and all of their shared thoughts. And of course, you could always purchase some swag. And don't forget to patron our sponsors. So I guess with that, we're going to wrap this up and say, this is David from Fort Washington.
And Max in Hartford.
And Chris in Alberta.
Thanks for listening.